Where's the water? The water that's clear. Where's the water? The water that's pure. Once upon a time, there was a boy and his father. And the boy and his father, they were walking. And they were walking kind of desperate-like because that's what they were feeling. They were feeling desperate because they were looking for water. Water that was clear, that was pure, that you could drink. And why? I'll tell you. Back home in their village, why, it seemed like the water they had there was somehow foul and fetid, and nobody could drink it without getting real sick. Their mother had been drinking it, the boy's mother had been drinking it, the boy's uncle had been drinking it, the boy's cousins and sisters and brothers and everybody, and the whole town was sick now. Indeed, so sick that the only two people left were the boy and his dad. And that's why they were out walking, you see. That's why they were out walking the countryside, searching for the water. Searching for the water that wasn't foul. And every village they came to, why? They'd go to that village and they'd say, "Excuse me, we're sorry to bother you, but we're kind of desperate, you see, because everybody back in our village," and they'd tell them the whole story. And then they'd say, "But do you have clear water here? Do you have pure water that we could take some of it home with us?" And the people in the village would say, "Well, we could give you some of our water, but it's so difficult to carry water, you see, that what you really need is you need to go to the spring up in the mountains, that one drop of which will purify any water source, any water that you have. One drop of it will make it all good again, and you can drink as much as you want then." And the father, when he heard that, he said, "Where? Where is such a place to be found?" They said, "Oh, see those mountains there? Up there." And the father, he said to his son, "Son, come on, let's go. We're walking and we're going to carry on until we get there, even if it takes us all day and all night." Well, that's pretty much what it did take. Just walking and walking they were. The father and his son. And every place they came to, they just wanted to check the story. So they'd say, "Excuse us, but do you know of anywhere we can find pure water, water that's good to drink?" All the people would say, "Well, there's plenty of pure water around here. We drink it all the time. But if you want something really special, you should go up into the mountains. There's a spring there, one drop of which," they say, "Thank you very much. We just wanted to check." And on they would go. Walking towards the mountains. Walking towards the mountains. Until at last, they came to the foothills of those mountains. And it was steep and hard climbing from then on. It was steep and hard climbing, but they made sure that they always had the sound of trickling water in their ears. They always made sure they had the sound of trickling water in their ears, because do you know what that meant? It meant they were hard on the heels of that magic spring that was up there, hard on the heels of that magic spring that they were looking for. And so they were scrambling up rocks, they were clambering up the side of riverbanks, they were doing just about everything you could imagine that was dangerous and scary to do while climbing up a mountainside. And it was a wonder the two of them didn't fall down in a heap with crushed bones and all. But before long, why? The steepness, it starts giving way to a gentle gradient. And that gentle gradient, that gentle slope, it starts giving way to what's something more like a plateau, like a place where the ground is nice and flat, but they're still following the stream, you see? They're still following the stream because they can hear it still in their ears, all those scraped knees they've got on the way up, all those almost broken bones that they've risked on the way up. Why? They've always made sure that that little tinkling sound is always in their ears. And so now, they're following it like two hounds, like two pack animals, just hunting that spring they are, with their noses, or in this case, their ears to the ground, just listening to that little tinkling sound of the water that it comes bubbling out of the ground. And it's not too long. With that kind of attention, you can find pretty much anything. It's not too long before the boy says, "Father, over here!" When the boy calls the father over, and when the father comes, he looks down, and the two of them, they see this little miracle down there in the long grass. The water is just bubbling out of the ground. Bubbling out of the ground. And they know at once, this must be the spring. Because it's got something, that water. It's got something kind of magic about it. Almost like just by the looking at it, you can tell that one drop of that would purify just about anything. And they're just ready to scoop it up and put it in the little gourd that they've got with them when they hear something behind them that's not at all what they were hoping to hear. They hear something behind them kind of fearsome and kind of scary, like a growling noise that's right there behind them. A growl. And the sun, he feels like his heart stopped beating. And the father, he puts one hand over his son's shoulder, hoping to protect him, but thinking, if the beast is as big as the growl, there's going to be no protecting either of us. And slowly and smoothly as silk rustling, the two of them, they turn their heads real carefully around until they can see behind them what it was that was making that growl. And what is it? But standing there, there's a lion. A beautiful lion. He's got golden hair in his mane. And he's got a huge face. And a body so big and so strong. And so fearsome looking that you wouldn't want to tangle with that lion. No, sir. And what does the lion say? He says, what do you want?
Oh, says the father, oh, we're terribly sorry to disturb you. It's just that everyone in my village is almost dying from the water we got there, and we heard that this water here, one drop of it purifies any water source you got. So that's why we came here. We wanted to just take home just a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of it, so that everyone back in our village can get well again. Is that okay?
The lion says, if you want my water, you gotta fight me first.
What? Says the boy. You're kidding, says the father. Fight you?
Yep, says the lion. Fight me.
We can't fight you. You're too big. You're too fierce. You're too...
The father, he stopped in mid-sentence by his son. And the boy just puts a hand on his father's knee and says, just a minute. Okay, he says to the lion. Let's have a competition. Whoever can count to 100 first wins, okay? The lion, he's not thinking very hard. You see, he's not really thinking very straight. All he can see is a little boy challenging him. And at once, he says, yeah, all right. And right there and then, something amazing happens. The boy sets off like a counting machine. His mouth starts going, he starts counting like there's no tomorrow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And the lion is just sitting there and just staring at the boy. And it's then that the poor old lion realises that he has no idea how to count to 100. He got plenty of ideas as to how to whop people with his claws and how to bite them and all, but he's got no idea even what comes after 1. Meanwhile, the boy is 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, and the lion, poor lion's just sitting there,
1... Now, what was it after 1?
The boy's just going like a counting machine, like a clickety clackety clickety clackety counting machine, and the lion is shaking his big old mane as if he's trying to get his brain to function properly, trying to get his brain to click into gear. Two, says the lion. Two. Meanwhile, the boy is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. And the lion is, well, now what comes after two? And he starts, well, scratching himself on the head with a big old claw, as if trying to prompt his old brain to work. Two, one, two.
78, 79, 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86.
Three, says the lion. Three. One, two, three. Oh.
94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99. 100, says the boy. And the lion is just,
oh, I think I was going to get there. Just not as fast as that.
I win, said the boy. Now you have to give us the water. Well, the lion is,
oh, fair enough. I guess you won that fair and square. I never could figure out how well to count. Okay, so take it. But listen, all you need is one drop. And then your water will be so pure that people will come from other places to come and drink it.
Oh, we don't mind that, said the father. They've all been very helpful. And he quickly scooped up all the water he could into that little gourd that they'd brought with them, and he tightened it up and he fastened it under his belt like it was the most precious thing in the world. And the boy and the father, they said thank you very much to the lion, and they set off back walking home. And all the time they walked, they sang. We found the water. The water that's pure. We found the water. The water that's pure. And when they got back to the village, why? One drop of that water was all it took. Soon that fetid old water source of theirs was so clean and so sparkling you could wash yourself just in the sunlight reflecting off the surface of it. It was that wonderful. And anybody that drank it, why, would declare that there was something magnificent about that water, something wonderful and special. And the boy never felt so proud in his life. He never felt so happy and so proud of what he'd managed to do. And there was only one person prouder than him. There was only one person prouder than him in the whole wide world. And that was his father. That was his father.